11. Prohibition of plucking facial hair. On the basis of the following hadith, it is believed that women are not allowed to pluck their facial hair. Abdullah ibn Masud has reported, God curses those ladies who practice tattooing and those who get themselves tattooed and those ladies who remove the hair from their eyebrows and faces and those who make artificial spaces between their teeth in order to look more beautiful, whereby they change God's creation. His saying reached a lady from Bani Asad called Umme Yaqub, who came to Abdullah ibn Masud and said, I have come to know that you have cursed such and such ladies. He replied, Why should I not curse those whom God's Prophet has cursed and who are cursed in God's book? Umme Yaqub said, I have read the whole Quran, but I did not find in it what you say. Abdullah ibn Masud replied, Indeed, if you have read it, that is the Quran, you have found it. Didn't you read, And whatsoever the Prophet gave you, take it, and whatsoever he forbade you, you abstain from it. Surah number 59, verse 7. She replied, Yes, I did. Abdullah said, Indeed, God's Prophet forbade such things. Umme Yaqub said, But I see your wife doing these things. Abdullah ibn Masud replied, Go and watch her. She went and washed her, but could not see anything in support of her statement. On that, Abdullah said, If my wife was as you thought, I would not keep her in my company. Al-Bukhari, Al-Jami al-Sahih, Volume 4, page 1853, Hadith number 4604. One must always keep in consideration two fundamental principles while studying and interpreting ahadiths. Firstly, in order to determine as far as possible the context and the background, all ahadiths on a particular subject should be collected and then analyzed to ascertain the overall picture. Secondly, they must be related to the Quran and Sunnah. This means that they must have a base in these two primary sources of Islam. They cannot and must not be taken independently. Applying these principles to the above-quoted hadith shows that there were a number of practices, only some of which have been mentioned in this hadith, which the Arab ladies used to undertake, which entirely changed their natural physical appearance, and some of which actually gave a false impression of their outward looks. Almost all the major books of hadith mention the various texts in which these practices have been narrated. The initial part of the hadith mentioned above, that is, whereby change God's creation, itself suggests the relationship of this hadith with the Quran. Verse 31 of Surah Rum reads thus, Fitratullahi allati fatara an-nasa 'alayha la tabdila li khalqillah. Follow the nature upon which God has created mankind. It is not proper to change their nature. Surah number 30, verse 30. It is in accordance with this principle mentioned in the Quran that the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam forbade a number of such practices. In other words, the nature, physical as well as spiritual, of a human being must be preserved in the shape God has created it. Consequently, anything which may become a means of changing or modifying this nature is undesirable. However, a fine distinction exists between beautification to quench one's aesthetic sense and alteration, the former being a permissible thing. These ahadiths also mention a practice called tanammus, which means removing the hair which extends onto the forehead in a particular style. This again was forbidden by the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. The hadith quoted above contains this word. However, it has been erroneously translated as to remove hair from the face. In the light of this analysis, it is evident that removing hair from the face is something which the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam never forbade. 12. Going out without the husband's permission. There is a hadith which says that a lady must seek permission from her husband before going out. Ibn Umar reports from the Prophet that once a lady came to the Prophet and asked him about the rights of a husband on his wife. He replied, She should not leave his house without his permission. Al-Bahiqi, As-Sunan al-Kubra, Volume 7, page 292, Hadith number 14490. It needs to be appreciated that a family by analogy is similar to a state. All citizens of a state are expected to abide by the rules and regulations of the country they live in. they are expected to adopt an attitude of adjustment and harmony with the country. This, of course, does not mean that they cannot differ with its policies. They have the inalienable democratic right to differ and present their differences in a befitting manner. This submission is actually an essential requirement for discipline and order, without which anarchy may result. Similarly, in the case of a family setup, it is essential that the person who is its head be shown obedience. In other words, submission to authority is not specific to the gender of the authority. Whoever is the authority must be submitted to. Gender does not dictate submissiveness. It is authority which does. It is common knowledge that in different spheres of activities, people have different abilities, and justice entails that a person be made responsible according to his or her abilities and given authority on that basis. We have been informed by divine revelation that it is the husband who is more suitable to be the head of the family. Owing to this relative superiority, women are directed by the Quran in Surah Nisa, verse 34, to submit to men, not because men are superior human beings, but because in this particular case, it is men who have been vested with authority. If women had been more suitable for the task of heading a family, men would have been similarly directed to adopt this attitude of adjustment. Thus, Islam requires that the wife adopt an attitude of adjustment in harmony with the husband, and the husband is required to be affectionate and accommodating as far as possible to the needs of his wife. He must not impose any undue restrictions on her, for this will ignite the wrath of God upon him. With regard to a wife seeking her husband's permission before leaving the house, the proper perspective must be understood. In general circumstances of mutual trust, there is no need for a wife to ask permission from her husband to go out. However, in certain circumstances in which the husband genuinely considers that going out might disrupt the family in any way, he has the authority to exercise his right of stopping her, and in these circumstances, she should always ask his permission to leave the house. In this regard, the husband must remember that if he imposes himself without any sound and justifiable reason, he would be crossing the bounds and invoking the displeasure of the Almighty. His wrong behavior may even lead the wife to abandon him, for which he would be solely responsible. 13. Iddat restrictions. The clarifications presented in this section are translated and adapted from Javed Ahmed Ghamadi's Mizan. It is generally held that divorced or widowed women must spend their iddat while being permanently confined to their homes and wearing white clothes. Moreover, the iddat period is generally not spent at the husband's house. In this regard, the following points must be clearly understood. Firstly, the basic reason for observing this period is to ascertain whether a lady is pregnant or not. It is to protect the lineage of the husband that she undergoes this wait. The words, فَمَا لَكُمْ عَلَيْهِنَّ مِنْ عِدَّةٍ, or no period of iddat which they have for you, which you can ask them to complete, of Surah Ahzab, clearly point to the fact that if pregnancy is a possibility, then observing the iddat is an obligation imposed on the wife from the husband. Consequently, if a lady is past her childbearing age, or if it can be determined through scientific means that a lady is not pregnant, she will not be required to observe the iddah. On these very grounds, the Quran has exempted newly married women who have not gone near their husbands from iddah. يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا إِذَا نَكَحْتُمُ الْمُؤْمِنَاتِ ثُمَّ تَلَّقْتُمُوهُنَّ مِنْ قَبْلِ أَن تَمَسُّوهُنَّ فَمَا لَكُمْ عَلَيْهِنَّ مِنْ عِدَّةٍ تَعْتَدُّونَهَا. Believers, when you marry believing women and then divorce them before you have touched them, no period of iddat have they for you which you can ask them to complete. Surah number 33, verse 49. Secondly, during iddat, neither should a wife leave her house, nor is the husband authorized to turn her out from her house. Living together might hopefully be beneficial for both, and they might reconcile and thus save a family from breaking. The only exception to this is that if a wife is guilty of fornication, in which case neither is it proper to demand from the husband to keep the wife in the house, nor can the benefit be attained for which this directive had been given. Thirdly, as far as the restrictions of iddat are concerned, all of them are based on protecting the lineage of the child that a widow or a divorced lady might be carrying. She can go out for any purpose which includes activities as austere as the Hajj and as light as an amusement park if she has made sure that this basic objective is not sacrificed. Fourthly, for a widow the iddat has its own sanctity and she should observe this period with solemnity and austerity. So natural is this observance that widows of most societies are not required to be told to dress and behave in accordance with the norms of the circumstances that face them. 14. Marriage with minor girls. There are some scholars who make the fourth verse of Surah Talaq as basis of their opinion that Islam has allowed marriage and its consummation with minor girls. This is an erroneous conclusion. Marriage with minor girls is an issue which has not been discussed by the Quran at all. However, the referred verse has nothing to do with this issue. If the linguistic principles of the Arabic language are taken into consideration, the correct translation of the last part of this verse is وَاللَّائِي يَئِسْنَ مِنَ الْمَحِيدِ مِنْ نِسَائِكُمْ إِنْ اِرْتَبْتُمْ فَعِدَّتُهُنَّ ثَلَاثَةُ أَشْهُرٍ وَاللَّائِي لَمْ يَحِدْنَ. And those of your women who have ceased menstruating, and those women whose menstrual courses have not begun, in spite of the fact that they have reached the age in which women normally have menses, their waiting period is 3 months as well. Surah number 65, verse 4. This translation stems from the fact that the Arabic particle used for negation in this verse is lam and not ma. The verse is generally translated by disregarding this subtle difference as, and those of your women who have ceased menstruating and those whose menstrual courses have not begun, their waiting period is 3 months as well. Consequently, it is generally construed that in this verse, the iddat or the waiting period of those divorced women, that is girls more so, is stated who have yet to reach the age of puberty. So the proponents of this view infer that Islam allows marriage with minor girls.